We're living in a really interesting time where people are just starting to understand the value of their interactions with different digital products and the different types of outputs that they get. But then couple in the fact of where we're seeing the future of how, you know, Gen AI related to still keeping me unique and special and different, it is important. And that's where I really am curious to see how this year is going to unfold related to individuals understanding the value of that data and how to stay not only safe as you're operating online, but how to also think about how you either get compensated for the use of your data or how you get to set the parameters of what you want to see with the different type of data that can be used in training tools.
Hello and welcome to Code to Cloud. I'm Tim Chase, Global Field CISO at Lacework, and I'm excited to chat today with Jenny Brinkley. Jenny is a director of Amazon Security at AWS, and prior to joining Amazon, she co-founded an artificial intelligence startup called Harvest.ai, focused on protecting highly sensitive data using behavior analytics to prevent data loss. Harvest.ai was then acquired by AWS in April of 2016. Jenny has also been awarded a few patents focused on data loss prevention and the right to be digitally forgotten. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tim. I'm so happy to be here.
You know, data privacy, data classification, all of that is something that I'm very passionate about. And like everybody else, I think that is on LinkedIn, you know, we made our predictions for 2023. And one of the ones that I had was I felt like it was going to be the year of data protection where people start caring about it more. But kind of even going back before that, obviously, this is something that has been on the forefront of your mind for a while because you co-founded a company around this a long time ago. Why do you think that it's taken so long for the industry to, I don't know, start caring or start thinking more about the data that they're collecting?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I've been so challenged with over the past few years as to why we've been slow to adopt. I think a couple of reasons. First, we always talk about your data is your data. You know, as you work with different cloud service providers and as you're thinking about different types of technologies that are used within your business environment, there's this expectation, this mutual understanding of my data is my data and how you use that data. There's a contractual obligation related. Where I think things are starting to evolve is that people are starting to realize the value of data and how they can actually use it for better outcomes for others. And that's where I'm really excited to see where the future of generative AI not being a theory or a concept, but people being and understanding, really putting it to practice of how that relates then to data protection.
Yeah, that's something that's really interesting to me is how Gen AI and data classification and data really start to intersect. But one of the things you were talking about is getting value for data. Like, what is the value of people's data exactly?
I think it's about like what you create, what you use, and what you're building. Like, everything that you do online in your day-to-day life, you're creating, we always talk about digital footprints, but it's really understanding how that then becomes self-identifying to you as the individual and the value of you as the individual, your interests, your passions, as you're building, creating the things that make you unique. And that's what's going to propel this kind of future as we start thinking about data classification, related to data privacy, related to generative AI. So where the human still is a massive part of this entire equation. I think we're living in a really interesting time where people are just starting to understand the value of their interactions with different digital products and the different types of outputs that they get. But then couple in the fact of where we're seeing the future of how, you know, Gen AI related to still keeping me unique and special and different. It is important. And that's where I really am curious to see how this year is going to unfold related to individuals understanding the value of that data and how to stay not only safe as you're operating online, but how to also think about how you either get compensated for the use of your data or how you get to set the parameters of what you want to see with the different type of data that can be used in training tools. And that was something we were trying to figure out, you know, in 2016 when we joined Amazon, because they were working in that space, gosh, for 15 plus years at that point. And so it was all about scale to try to solve for that problem. Because I still think it's a problem. I still think that people don't necessarily understand what they create and how valuable that is, and then how to protect themselves as they're operating within different technology stacks.
No, I think you're right. And it goes along in my perspective of I've seen the conversation shift of how we need to be more business enablers, how we need in security to think more about the business. And I think as we put that business hat on and we start to understand what they want to accomplish, what do the executives want to accomplish? What does the business want to accomplish? I think the data naturally kind of comes with all of that, right? So, because when they build a new application, when they go to the cloud, whatever they're doing, it should ultimately enable the business to, in some way, more money, more customers, better bottom line, something along those lines. So I feel like as we're starting to see that shift of more executive buy-in to the cybersecurity, maybe the data conversation is finally coming along with it. And you combine that with all of the regulations that we're seeing, maybe both of those things together are having an impact.
Oh, 100%. No, you're 100% right. I think that it's becoming much more that we always talk about the C-suite conversations. Like things are evolving and changing so quickly to really understand the value of where security, data protection, data privacy all fit in, layered in with, to your point, around regulatory activity that we're starting to see more on a global scale outside of just outside of the state of California. Other entities are really coming together to say, hey, we've got to not only be accountable, but be consistent. And that's like the part where I think that as organizations like yourself too can really help inform that conversation with your customers to not necessarily like we demand this in terms of regulatory activity, but more of a conversation of, okay, how are we going to enable business? How are we going to keep people secure? How are we going to keep data secure, but also secure back to the end user? Like coming together as a collective as opposed to, okay, are we going to leave it up to the regulators to figure out how data privacy is considered or data protection is considered. Like, I think it's a mix of all of the above.
No, I do too. That's spot on. And I also think, you know, AWS is obviously in the cloud business, but I think as people are becoming more mature in the cloud and maybe they're getting better at securing their cloud infrastructure, to me, it's also kind of that natural next step, right? It's maybe they've got their security posture management better. Maybe now the next part is to understand what they're securing. Or even on top of that, maybe this is a valid theory too, of maybe they have a lot of CSPM findings and maybe they're new to the cloud and they don't know where to start, right? They have a lot of bad things and misconfigurations. Well, if you need a way to help prioritize and you can understand what data is impacted by the different posture findings, I think that's a way to help them prioritize and help them speak to the business of what they're doing to secure the data. I think maybe it's just a combination of a lot of things that are finally happening, a culmination over the last few years.
It is. And I also think that builders are becoming much more sophisticated in understanding the obligations of how security can either enable them to ship or to block them. And our whole philosophy and how we operate and how we work internally is really riding side by side with that builder to set the expectations of not only regulatory obligations as to how they build, but also the considerations of how data is used as they're building their services. And so it's not just security coming into, you know, don't do this, don't do that, or coming in with like a checklist. It's the builder actually coming with just this natural curiosity of, okay, I want to keep my customers secure. I want to build a product that we can ship out of the gate with all of the different regulatory obligations associated with it. How do I do it? And that conversation, I feel like, has really changed in the past year. There will be people that will debate me internally at Amazon about that. Like, no, it's always been our top priority, which it is. And I don't want to discount that. I think where I'm seeing such an evolution right now is builders understanding the importance of where security and data protection lives within their products. And it's not just security coming in as an afterthought. It's really coming in at the very beginning before they write a line of code of how should I be thinking about it? What are some of the considerations? I even actually like some of the conversations that builders are now bringing for some of the security use cases as we're thinking about different threat modeling activities prior to going through an AppSec review. Like they actually have evolved to a place of, okay, I need security. You're going to help me innovate. Let's do this together. And I've really seen that change in the past year. And part of it, I think, is some of the work that's been happening around developer relations. Some of it, I think, also has to do with people in terms of customers wanting more insight into how data is used to be able to build services at the scale of where we operate. But I do think the security community has done a really good job of not kind of being the individuals hiding out in the basement, being at the table with business leaders of saying, hey, you know, if you do this, you'll probably unblock this amount of revenue. So it becomes this revenue enabler as opposed to this check the box moment where they're just like, oh, I got to go talk to security to go get this thing done. It really has changed. And I've really seen it happen over the past year.
Yeah, you nailed it. It's a couple of the things, right? It's the security coming out of the basement, right? It's where we want to help you. They finally care about us. I know, it's exactly it. They finally care about us. They don't want to just stop us and laugh at us, which I felt like in the beginning, like, I got to tell you, like when I first started doing security teams, I literally had to have the conversation of like, look, when you're doing a pen test or you're testing this application, you can be like, you guys are an idiot. Look at you. Did like have the conversations between us, be like, look what this dev team did. When it leaves the room, be like, hey, like, let me show you what we found and let's figure out how not to do this next time. Right. Like that's an entire mindset that I feel like as a security industry, we're embracing more. Right. And some of it's the security champions. I know AWS calls them something different.
Guardians.
Yeah. So, you know, the guardians, the security champions, that's something that I've preached for years, done training on it. And I think that has helped. And then coming at it with the mindset of let's help you fix this earlier. Let's work together to collaborate and fostering that working relationship rather than just tossing it over, doing some tests and then tossing it back and there's no collaboration. So that's one of my favorite things that I could say that I've seen about the industry in the past, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Five years or so.
I will say one of the big reasons when we first joined AWS. And what I appreciated about Andy Jassy, who was the CEO at that time, it's so wild. I'm like, and now he's the CEO of Amazon. It's like wild to me to see the individuals I've worked with over the past 7 years too, of where they've gone and where they've taken their careers. But what I appreciated about Andy is you had a leader that would sit in meetings and be like, security is top priority. How are you working with security? To like our biggest builder owners inside of AWS. And then to empower Steve Schmidt, who, you know, back then was our was our chief information security officer, who now is responsible for security of all of Amazon, both our physical and digital, and the prioritization that we put around the security, not only narrative, but almost like an expectation of how we should be working, operating. But what I loved about it back then too was it was something that was discussed. Maybe some people weren't getting it and practicing it the way they should, but the fact that you had it at the very top of the company saying, hey, this is important, but it really has been this change, I think, of where people are realizing the value of the data that gets created out of these services that get built. How do you ultimately protect them? How do you ultimately enable customers to be able to do what they need to do with the data they're creating and feel confident with the different technology partners that they're working with that the data belongs to them? And that's something that I've been so focused on over these past few years at Amazon within AWS is kind of demystifying what that all means when we talk about shared responsibility model, or when we talk about the idea of how we practice encryption, or just giving some insights to manage at the scale that we manage within the company.
I love that. You know, two things, owning the data, understand the shared responsibility model is huge, but also like you mentioned, the importance of security at the executive layer. Like I can't, you know, emphasize that enough. Like when people come to me and they're like, which job should I take? You know, what should I ask when I go to get a job? I'm like, you know, find the one that you feel like you have the executive buy-in from the top. Because if you're fighting that, nothing else, then you're just going to be frustrated the rest of your time there. So I have been impressed with that. We've done a few, obviously, meetings with AWS at the different conferences and just chatted. And that's something that I've always found awesome. You guys do well.
No, thank you. Well, I mean, I think though also the community as a whole, I'll just say like watching other partners come into the conversation and working with their customer base, whether people build on AWS or not, I want people in cloud, like please. So is the safer that we can make the cloud for everybody, the easier that we can make it for everybody. That's the future, like in terms of how we come together as a community, like a real community. And not work in silos. That's where I get a lot of passion in the work that I'm able to do too.
No, I agree. I love that. So I want your opinion on something that I haven't found an answer to. So maybe Jenny will.
I don't know.
Jenny will have the answer. So Before I was at Lacework, I worked at a company called Calibra.
Okay.
Calibra was all about, they did data catalogs and they did data privacy and data categorization, all of this kind of stuff. But the primary market was to the data protection office, the DPOs, right? And so obviously their job is to understand the data that a company has, put it in a catalog so that, they understand everything that they can work from. So you don't have six copies of a customer data set. You can use the one copy that's the best. And knowing where your data is key, obviously, from a security perspective as well. And that's why we're seeing, you got Macy, you've got a couple of the big ones that were acquired last year that do DSPM and all of that. But the question that I have that I haven't put my finger on is, whose responsibility is it to understand what data you have and where it is? Obviously, security, our mantra has always been, you can't secure what you don't know about, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of the organizations today have a separate data office, right? Where that is their entire responsibility, is to track the data for everything. So, where does the responsibility of understanding what data you have and what kind of data it is, where do you think and where that it lies and what have you seen in your conversations?
Oh, that is a good one. So much of it right now, I think, is the individual that's producing the data, but then also having guardrails or expectations of what that data is. I think as a community, we don't do a good enough job explaining that to builders or explaining that to end users of what gets produced, who has access, how do you control that access, but then still create this space where people want to innovate and build and create and not feel that they're living under this like big brother type of space. Meaning, I want people to be able to design and build and dream and do all the things that make cloud so endless in terms of what people can ultimately design, right? Like, I always love to live in that world of the magic and the rainbows. People make jokes about that internally at Amazon. It's like, oh, Jenny, you're all about the rainbows and lollipops and the unicorns of how cloud operates and how it works. Actually, if you don't know Stephen Quigg, who we call Squig internally inside of AWS, Tim, I have got to get you connected with Squig.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love him so much because we make these jokes about like, oh, Jenny, it was all about the rainbows and the unicorns. And now it's really about the trolls that live under the bridge and watch out for, that dragon that's going to breathe fire on you. But not to like paint that picture of it's terrifying and scary world out there. But there's got to be this balance of how do you educate builders and make them feel confident and also give them the tools and the guardrails and the resources. So I think it's a collective. I think it's the people that are building. I think it's also up to the compliance organizations to do a much better job on setting those expectations of regulatory controls and obligations on individuals. But you've got to find this natural space where people still feel that they can create and build and be magic and be unicorns. Like, I don't want everyone to feel that there's dragons breathing fire at them all day, every day. Like, we've got to find this space. But I also think that the industry is still so ripe for disruption related to data loss prevention and around classification. Like, when we were trying to solve for this, and even, during my time on the Macy product, which I was so I feel so blessed I was able to spend that time in thinking about how data classification at the scale of AWS really should operate and how it should think. But I think that there's still such an open space for someone to come in and solve for making it easy. Like, how do you really identify that type of data that's like so important to your organization and who has access to it? And how do you turf up alerts in a way that can not only give you insight into how to take action, but that all should be automated for you. And that's where I really see the future of where generative AI is going to come into play.
That's what I was going to say.
And make it really cost effective. I think that that's always the biggest challenge in this space. It's like all this data that needs to get classified, you're constantly having to classify it. And then you get into these cost issues. And so then people are having to make trade-offs of, okay, well, I'm only going to care about this top of the funnel and everything else can... Not that I'm saying that people do that, but they have to start making these justifications of what am I going to classify, where I'm going to spend my money. So I'm hopeful that the direction of where the industry is going, where people are feeling much more responsibility of what they're building and creating, but also on the flip side, how can we as a community make better tools and resources available to builder populations to classify their data easily? I think that there's a lot of opportunity still in that space. again, probably unpopular with some of my colleagues. They're like, no, we've got to figure it out. I'm like, I don't think we do. And that's where I'm really excited to see kind of where the future of generative AI is going to come into play to solve for this.
I agree. I think you mentioned DLP, and that's, I'm getting ready to put a LinkedIn post that has an acronym in it, because I think it's something that was the right thing to do, but it meant different things to different people. And
100%.
For the most part, I don't think that they got it quite right. And I think because, you know, Microsoft had theirs, and I think, you know, Proofpoint, some other ones had theirs, right? And, and that all meant you had to be like, okay, what do you mean by DLP? Similar maybe to like zero trust. Okay, what do you mean by zero trust? Because what I think could be something different. So I think that it is ripe for a disruption. I think that, like you mentioned, maybe machine learning will help. Because I think that in my experience, sometimes we don't trust enough, or maybe it doesn't work as well on scale, the classification part of it. And it's still very much rules-based. Like if you look at any modern classification platform, it's still a form of regex. Right. And so maybe that can be combined with the machine learning to better understand the data set and provide some automation so that stuff doesn't leave that you don't want it to leave. Right. If it's PCI data, you know, that maybe doesn't match the regex, but the machine learning goes, oh, I know what this is. It matches this format here. Boom.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this a lot too, in terms of just, I think the burnout when I think about security analysts right now of having to manage and decide where to spend their time around alerting systems with different technologies. That's like the other piece in all of this too, is how do we make it easier for an analyst to be able to take action on what could be leaking out of a business? Like, I think that that is still such a massive opportunity for partners to really be thinking about, well, how do I make it easy? And how can I turf up this information? How can I action it? And where will machine learning come into play and almost redefine DLP. I mean, I feel like DLP is, when we had the startup before even joining Amazon, so much of it was about, oh, DLP is broken. We really need to fix it. And then everyone started talking about user behavior analytics. And for us, it was so focused on, yeah, how are users interacting with data and how old should they be? And what does that look like? But never really solved that DLP question of how magic would it be if you could automatically classify such a large corpus of information, but make it so it's consistent that everybody understood, from the analyst to the customer to the compliance office to the data privacy officer, with a shared language. And that is something I will say in terms of what we do at Amazon. I think we do a really good job internally of how we manage that, to kind of demystify that process. So there's an expectation of how you should be operating as you think about data classification and use. But again, I could never be more optimistic than I am of where we're headed and coming into this new year, and how security not only is at the forefront of every conversation. Maybe it's because I'm in security now that I'm like, oh, everybody's talking about us.
Now
we're like, we're cool kids, Tim. We're cool.
Finally, 20 years later, we're the cool ones.
Yeah, instead of like, oh, great, security's here. But like, people are seeking us out, like seeking us out to have those conversations and to try to help. So I don't know.
I'm
very excited to see where this year's going to go in this space.
I am too. I thought last year was an interesting year. I think this one's going to be even more interesting. But let's shift a little bit over to diversification of the workforce. So one of the things, I don't think that it takes very much research to understand that we are understaffed, and we have been for a little while now, especially in cloud security. The last that I heard, we were still at a negative unemployment rate in cloud security. We can't get enough people with experience to come on and take on these roles. And so, you know, that's a problem that I think that we need to solve. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts around diversification of the workforce in general. And then maybe I think you're doing some things to help fix that. So I just, you know, kind of open floor there a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that security problems are diverse. Like, it takes a diverse kind of mindset to be able to solve for some of the biggest events that have yet to even be designed. And so for me, so much of it is about, I want to be challenged. I want different perspectives, different ideas, different backgrounds, different ways people think about problems and challenges to be able to go solve for what those security problems look like. On the other side of it too, security jobs pay really well. And so a lot of how I'm thinking about the world, and I'm at that point in my life too, where some people still look at me like, oh, Jenny, you're diverse. I'm like, I am a middle-aged white lady with so much privilege. Like, I am not diverse. Like, I love that you think that, but it really is about how to make these opportunities available to individuals that don't look like me, that come from backgrounds where they don't realize these jobs are possible. And so a lot of the work that we're trying to accomplish now is, how do you get people to understand what they need to study, what they need to do, where they need to go to understand that these roles are available? Because ultimately, these are jobs that bring people up above the poverty line. These are jobs that could create multi-generational wealth opportunities. The amount of forward trajectory of what these kinds of jobs can bring. I mean, you could do something where you get a job in security and then maybe you want to run for office someday. I don't know. I don't know why that made me think about it that way. But I think that because of the space and because of the complexity of the different needs that we need to solve for, it's going to take different people and different perspective. I don't want to have a room full of like individuals that all, you know, once we're in a three-letter agency or all have their CS degrees. Like, I like having people around the table that actually have music degrees. I like some people that don't even have degrees, that, you know, just have a natural curiosity about how things work or have a mission-driven heart. Like, they want to protect people and keep people safe. And I think that that's something where everybody can agree with. Like, everybody fundamentally, no matter your background, perspectives and belief systems, you want to feel safe. And you want to protect those around you. And so when you find people that are naturally curious, mission-driven hearts, that have that idea of safety, you can develop some pretty cool teams around that if you give the right training and the resources and the mentorship, and it takes investment and it takes work. But the outcomes of what you get to see in terms of the types of solutioning that happens or conversations that get developed or changing how your perspective can approach a problem, it's the coolest thing. It takes work to make it happen.
It does. And I love it, because I think sometimes we get into this mindset of, I need the most technical person on the security team, or like, you have this vision of what you need, but, you know, so much of what you need, like you said, it's just the attitude, the willingness, the wanting to solve a problem. Like, it's the mental aspect of it, because you can train, if you get 60% of it, you can train the other 40 or 50.
Oh,
you can train
totally.
The other 50, right? And maybe they'll never be a hacker, right? Like, maybe they'll never be a red teamer. Maybe that's not going to be where they're at. But maybe they're going to be a killer GRC analyst.
Yeah,
maybe they'll be a killer person doing education, working on awareness, right? Like, I think everybody who has an interest in cybersecurity, like, they should, it's, you know, demystifying, or maybe even making them think, like, you don't have to be a DEF CON sort of persona to be successful in cybersecurity, right? And I think that we're still stuck there sometimes when we're
I think so.
Recruiting.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the things that we've been focused on is really looking for talent in places that people haven't looked for talent before. So developing either just even it's like a blush of showing up at an elementary school, which we've done, of talking about, you know, why should you think about multi-factor authentication? You're in the third grade, or, you know, what are some of the things that you should be telling your parents about how to stay safe as they're operating online? Or let me talk to you about what phishing is or what spoofing is, like trying to normalize some of the language. I think CISA is doing a good job of this right now with some of their Secure Your World messaging that they've started to build out. Like, I was watching, was it a football game? There was something, and I was like so surprised to like see something come across, that it was about Secure Your World, about I should care about multi-factor authentication. I should care. And like, started kind of going through all the different scenarios. And I think it's normalizing what security is without this idea that it's really hard to get into, or it's really scary place for it, or making it so it's just part of the everyday language of, yeah, of course, these are the things I'm going to do. Oh, wait, there's like careers that I can go and help people build out two-factor. Like, wait, there's careers that can help people think about how to build securely online. So it's also making those types of opportunities available to individuals that don't even realize that these are careers. And to your point about all the different types of roles, we're starting to do some things with professional sports leagues where retired players coming out of, you know, being on a team and being mission driven, and, you know, individuals that are, you know, they're retired, they want to go do something different, but they have this curiosity of, well, I want to keep my person safe. Well, I like working on a team and coming up with different opportunities of what that could look like. So I don't know. The reason why I stay in security is, one, I mean, I care so deeply about this idea of how to protect people as they operate online and make really smart decisions. But on the other side of it is really thinking about how do you bring people into these well-paying jobs that can completely change the trajectory of their life. I don't know about another career or another space where you can do that, because we're just at the forefront still of security careers for the future. Layer in things like what we're seeing around AI, but then also within Amazon, like Project Kuiper. I mean, I don't know of another place where I get to work on satellite security. That's like you could have an opportunity to go do that stuff, or how to secure the latest release out of Amazon Studios, or how to protect the writers working on a new Lord of the Rings to ensure that the scripts that they're writing get to the hands of actors and actresses without thinking about it slipping into nefarious hands. Like, it's such a, when I explain that to friends, because I still have a lot of friends that ask me questions like, I can't believe you're in security. Like, why are you doing that? And I talk about all the different types of spaces of where and what it really means. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. But
I get it now. They're still thinking of protect, like they're still thinking of like hacking or,
oh, you know, 100%.
They're not thinking of the other million aspects of it. You know, stopping the people who follow behind you when you walk into a building because they're surfing. Yeah. I mean, there's a million parts of it. But I interviewed a guy a long time ago. He was on a panel that was with Amazon's. He did a Prime Video. He was head of their security. We talked a lot about kind of what he did, and it was super interesting. I love what you said about the kids side of things. You know, my daughter is 12, and so she's kind of going through that, you know, what am I going to do, right, when I grow? And like, she'll sit beside me sometimes and code in that those studios that they have for kids.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just an opportunity that, you know, I didn't have growing up, but that's kind of getting her mind like, is this something that I want to do? Because she's on a vet kick, right? And it's like, well, she got that experience from an exposure to a TV show that's now like getting her thinking about that. And so everything that we can do to get to the schools, to the, even the lower income, the less privileged schools, to let them know what's out there and get that working in their mind so that they can kind of work towards something. I think that's a great idea.
I think a lot of it is about just the normalization. Like,
yes.
So it doesn't feel like such a hurdle. Like, my whole dream, and I'll put it here because I've like seed this out in a couple of different places. Like, I would love to see us on Thursday Night Football during Prime Video, during Cybersecurity Awareness Month in the month of October, having Tony Gonzalez talk about the importance of insert your security message, right? Like, having it so it doesn't feel like this obtuse, obscure thing that we don't really need to worry about it. Like, things are just going to take care of themselves. And I do work in an environment, though, where some people do want it just humming in the background. Like, a lot of people are like, I don't care how Bluetooth works. I just want it to work. But I think with security, to help normalize it for individuals to realize that there's careers available to them, you need to be talking, because there's so many different concepts and layers to it that get people an understanding of how can I get involved in this career? What are the things I'm passionate about, or what do I really care about in this category? So anyway, so Thursday Night Football, you've heard it here for like the 50th time, I tell people, but I would love that.
Let's call Thomas after this CISO at the NFL and see if we can get that done.
Done. Tim, we're doing it. You'll be there with Tony.
I got my Titan shirt on right now.
See, there you go. There you go. But I'm serious. Like, it's about like normalizing it and showing up where people are that don't really realize these careers are available or opportunities are available to them, and just kind of making it everyday conversation.
And I would just say, if this is of interest to anybody, like, look locally. I guarantee you that there's something that's out there. Like, I live in Nashville, and I know that our ISSA team here locally does stuff with the schools. They invited the local university to be a part of the hackathon that they did at the security conference. Like, there's initiatives that they have to connect to high schools. So like, if that, you know, I would just encourage everyone to look out there, see what you can do, and let's get this next generation of kids in the field, because it's not going to go away. This is going to be here for a while. We don't even know what it's going to look like in 10 years, but let's get them in the field and started. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, that was Tim. I was going to challenge it too. I'm like, hit Tim up, hit me up, like hit us both up. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're interested in this, is something that you're passionate about, I think, again, it comes back to community and working together to really set those expectations and opportunities on the schools that you're involved with, or where your kids are at, or your friends' kids are at, and just normalizing what a security career actually means and what it looks like. think that we can really make a change.
I do too. It's something I want to see for all my kids, my daughters, my sons, get it out there and bring them in. But I think that will do for us today. Listeners, thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks, Jenny, for being here. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And we will see you next time on Code to Cloud.
This podcast is brought to you by Lacework, the leading data-driven cloud-native application protection platform. Lacework is trusted by nearly 1,000 global innovators to secure the cloud from build to run. Lacework delivers true end-to-end protection, empowering customers to prioritize risks, find known and unknown threats faster, achieve continuous cloud compliance, and work smarter, not harder, all from one unified platform. Learn more at lacework.com.